to enjoy the feeling of being cherished by one's father, or to receive visions straight from heaven of a grand future. But Joseph's brothers, instead of facing their desire to be cherished and honored, let envy stew in their hearts. In fact, they cooked up a plan to kill their younger brother. At the last minute, the eldest, feeling guilty, persuaded his siblings to sell Joseph into slavery instead of killing him. Still, the action broke their father's heart. Do you have an envious part that feels like Joseph's brothers did? Do you sometimes see another person's success and let it torment your soul? If so, take heart. You can focus on your envy and befriend it. It may even help you become your best self. Think about your relationship to your envy and desire. In general, where are you in relation to them? Are you too close? Are you at a comfortable distance? Or are you too far? Let's look at how a client faced his desire for a woman he couldn't have, and how his envy motivated him to pursue a fulfilling relationship instead. Jose takes a U-turn when he feels envy. Jose came to see me, Kim, because he couldn't get over the fact that the woman he loved was marrying another man. I dated Amelia for years, he told me. She just didn't know it. Overwhelmed by years of longing for this unavailable woman, Jose felt trapped in a whirlwind of envy and unmet desire. Focus on and befriend the protector. As we began our counseling work, I asked Jose more about his relationship with Amelia. I met her in an English class during our last semester at college, he said. We had long conversations about the books we were reading. I'd never met anyone quite like her before. I knew she had a boyfriend, but she led me to think that she cared for me. On the last day of class, she told me how much she'd enjoyed spending time together. These past few years, she's kept in touch with letters here and there, and she's even come to visit me. We have this incredible connection. I can't believe she's getting married. So, some part of you believed there was more there with Amelia, even though you knew she had a serious boyfriend, I asked. Yes, Jose replied. In some ways, knowing she was dating Matthew made me want her even more. I wanted what he had, she said. How do you feel toward that part of you that envies Matthew? I asked. I hate it, he replied. Why can't I just move on and focus on another woman, one who's available, one who wants to be with me? Could you extend compassion to your well-meaning inner critic, Jose? I asked. Let it know you appreciate its good intentions. And let it know that if we can get to know your envy, we might be able to help you developing a satisfying relationship. When understood instead of criticized, Jose's envy was willing to relax. As Jose continued to focus on and befriend it, he learned that its role was to distract him by reminding him constantly about what others had. We soon came to realize that it was working hard to numb the pain of an exile. Focus on and befriend the exile. The next time he came to see me, Jose had seen Amelia for the last time. I want to understand this part of myself that wants her to love me, Jose said, even though I know she doesn't. Jose, could you focus for a moment on that desire? I asked. How do you feel toward that longing part of your soul? I feel compassion, he said. It's reminding me of when my mom dropped me off at my grandmother's and didn't come back. As Jose connected to his desire from his spirit-led self, he befriended it. He then started to realize that his biggest problem was not Amelia. Rather, he was overwhelmed by a desire to be loved, stemming from his grade school years, when his mother, who struggled with addiction, had abandoned him. He was trying to heal by subconsciously recreating a familiar situation and pursuing unavailable women. Invite and unburden. Jose continued to share the memories his exiled desire was showing him. Growing up, he had longed for his mother's presence. After listening, I asked him if Jesus was near this part of him that was caught in the pain of the past. Jose paused for a moment and then said, I'm afraid if I invite Jesus to be near, I'll have to let my mom go. I'll have to let go of my hope that someday I'll be close to my mother. What does this part of you need from Jesus? I asked. It wants him to know how much I long to be loved and how much it hurts that she left, Jose said, connecting to this exile. I can see a light shining on this young part of me, that has been longing for my mother all of these years. Jesus is with this part of me now, he shared after a few moments. He understands. Jose shared with me later that he had started praying for this part of himself. Using his prayerful imagination, he could see it coming out from the dark place where it had been in hiding and stepping bravely into the light. As Jose invited Jesus to be near and unburdened the belief that he was insignificant, he received the knowledge that he was loved by God. He began to feel the joy of being alive and sensed himself beginning to dream. Integrate. Now that your desire is learning to step into the light of God's presence, is there another role your envy wants to have? I asked Jose. His answer came quickly. It wants to remind me when I'm living in the past. Months later, Jose reported that he had met someone new. He was taking steps toward developing a meaningful relationship for the first time in his life. Summary of Jose's U-turn. As Jose began to focus on and befriend his envy, it relaxed. It had been too close, but on receiving his compassion, it settled at a comfortable distance from his spirit-led self. Jose then gained access to the exiled desire that his envy had stepped in to protect. As Jose befriended this exile, he invited Jesus to be near. It then received Jesus' love and unburdened its painful belief. As a result, he stopped longing for someone he couldn't have. Instead, his envy became a signifier to him that there was some part needing to work through more grief from the past. Eventually, Jose stopped pursuing unavailable women and opened his heart in healthy ways to authentic love. From this spirit-led place, he began to live in his God-given potential. Like Jose, you can learn from parts of your soul when their strategies have backfired. Instead of making unsatisfying life choices, you can develop a healthy relationship with your envy and the unmet desire it has been protecting. Getting to know envy. Your envy gets a bad rap for all its valiant work on behalf of your exiles. With a little attention, envy can become your ally, prompting you to invite Jesus to minister to and redirect your desires. Recognizing that your spirit-led self cares for it compassionately, this imposing part will gain trust in your ability to lead it. As you practice spirit-led self-leadership, your envy can advocate for exiles waiting for you to befriend them. When you do, you'll finally address the unmet desire that envy has been serving so faithfully over the years. And when you start to look at desire, you may stumble upon another part of yourself that carries the grief of loss or regret. As you get to know your desire, welcome the grief you encounter too. Embracing your grief helps you process it and harness the power of your desire to inform your life choices. Instead of envying someone else's greener grass, you'll start enjoying the beauty growing right in front of you and watering your own lawn. So, when you start to feel the curse of comparison, put your devoted envy to work for you. Focus on it and befriend it, appreciating its good intentions. Invite Jesus to be with it, unburdening its false beliefs. And if you follow the 5 steps with the desire your envy protects, you can integrate these 2 valuable parts of your soul into a team of former rivals. Benefits, dangers, needs, and fears. Consider the benefits, dangers, needs, and fears associated with feeling envy. Benefits. Think of envy as a signpost pointing you to areas of your life that need your attention. The presence of this feeling gives you clues about the state of your soul and alerts you to growth opportunities. Like all other emotions, your envy doesn't want to be shoved aside, but rather heard and understood. When treated as an ally, your envy can lead you to longings you've ignored or denied, alert you to a vulnerable part of your soul that might be feeling neglected, help you become realistic about your limitations so you can move forward with realistic goals, reveal unrealized potential within you, learn from the successes of others. Dangers. The quickest way to lose your appreciation for something special is to compare it to something that seems better. Envy causes terrible damage if ruling your heart. Envy will express itself. The question is, when, where, and how. Without healthy internal boundaries, your envy surfaces in unhealthy ways and leads to petty attitudes, anger, bullying, or hatred toward other people, attempts or desires to thwart other people's happiness, stealing and cheating, distraction from your life's purpose, failure to acknowledge legitimate desires, isolation and missed opportunities to serve others and build community. Needs. To stay within healthy boundary lines, your envy needs to learn to give you some space so you can gain clear perspective. Offer your resentment open-handedly to God, inviting Him to shape your longings. Learn to trust your spirit-led self so it can assume a more helpful role in your internal family. Fears. Like all other parts of you, your envy is trying to help you, even though its methods may be misguided. To help your envy stay within healthy boundary lines and become a helpful member of your internal family, get to know its fears about letting your spirit-led self take the lead. Some examples of those fears may be, I'll be stifled by heartache the rest of my life. My desires will be forgotten or ignored. I'll always be unhappy. I'll be bored if I don't get what I want. When you extend compassion to your envy, it loses its power over you. Then, as you gain clarity about the deeper desire it's protecting, you're able to redirect its energy into pursuing noble dreams. When it learns to trust your spirit-led self, your envy can become your champion, cheering you on as you stay focused on building your life. Envy versus jealousy. In some instances, a feeling akin to envy, jealousy to be precise, isn't necessarily out of line. Whereas envy longs for something that isn't rightfully yours, jealousy is the desire to possess what is rightfully yours. For example, a wife rightly feels jealousy when her husband has an affair. Jealousy was God's response when His chosen people, the nation of Israel, repeatedly turned from Him throughout history. In fact, Exodus chapter 34, verse 14 tells us that one of God's names is jealous. Do not worship any other god, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. Not only did God feel jealous when the Israelites gave their hearts to idols, but He directed that energy to draw His people back to Himself. Through Jesus' death, He made a way to adopt new children and lavished His love upon them to remind His first children, the children of Israel, of His goodness. His motivation wasn't to hurt the Israelites. He wanted to show them what they were missing so they would return to Him. Romans chapter 11, verse 11. Just as God harnessed the power of His jealousy, so you can put your jealousy to work for a higher purpose. It's important, then, to distinguish envy from jealousy and the issues underlying these feelings. For example, envy may reflect a crisis of faith, a low self-image, or insidious fear of failure and loss. When befriended, it can become deep respect and admiration for another person. Likewise, getting to know your jealousy will benefit your internal family. Are your jealous feelings coming from an exiled insecurity or from a genuine desire to protect something you love? If you're not certain, follow the 5 steps to find out. Honor your longings and redirect your unmet desire. Take a U-turn to befriend these powerful feelings and turn them into your greatest allies. Caution, entitlement mentality at work. Parts of you may believe you deserve the things you desire, and you're owed whatever you want. I deserve to have a wonderful spouse. I deserve to have accomplished children. Or, I deserve to have success. As you listen to your envy and invite Jesus to be near it, gently remind it of what you know in your heart to be true, that you're not entitled to anything, and that He gave you every good thing in your life as a generous gift. Then, harness envy's energy, reshape your dreams in partnership with God, and watch His divine plan unfold. The cause of envy, unmet desire. What causes your envy? We've discussed that the main cause is a tender, unmet desire that envy attempts to protect. Facing your envy brings you into contact with your deepest desires hiding beneath it. These desires are a double-edged sword. They can remind you of missed opportunities, leading you down a path of regret. They can also drive you to pursue meaningful passions or connection with others and greater fulfillment in your life.
For example, when I, Allison, was in graduate school, I found myself envying a woman I worked for. I didn't want to envy this lovely woman who had been nothing but kind to me. I hated feeling that way. But as I faced my envy, I became aware of unacknowledged longings inside my soul. And over time, I began to realign parts of my soul in support of pursuing what had been a hidden desire. I shifted from envying her to recognizing she had much to teach me.
Desire can be painful, even dangerous. To open yourself to desire means becoming vulnerable to loss and regret. No wonder you try to distance your desire and settle for envy. But desire can also drive you to build an abundant life. Without it, who would want to get out of bed in the morning? If you want to be whole, open your heart to your desire and lead it gently before God. When I, Kim, was a kid at summer camp, I wrote home to my mom that I missed her and was lonely. I wanted to have friends, but when I first arrived at camp, I didn't. I would check off each passing day on my calendar, waiting until I could see her again. She wrote me back with good advice. Find another camper who also seems homesick and ask her to do something fun. Soon after, I found myself on our cabin rooftop with new friends and our fun counselor who was letting us have contraband chewing gum for one special night. Gazing at the stars and listening to country music on the radio together, I remember thinking, the party's going on right here. God doesn't promise to give you everything you want, and yet he wants you to be satisfied. In fact, he gives you longings so he can ultimately fulfill them. When you surrender your dreams to him, the sting of unfulfilled desire subsides. He works gently in your heart to honor your loss and help you design new dreams. With his spirit leading your soul, you'll find yourself journeying from the angst of isolation to purposeful connection. IFS founder Richard Schwartz paints a hopeful picture with these words. Think of what your life might be like if all the energy you spent, for example, angrily stewing about what others have done to you, or obsessively daydreaming about your missing soulmate, were available to you in the present moment and were channeled toward fully enjoying whatever you're doing right now. Create the life of your dreams. In one of his most famous sermons, C.S. Lewis vividly illustrated the value of desire. He upended the misconception that trusting God with desires leads to a grim, unfulfilling life. Lewis suggested instead that God wants to fulfill our desires. On June 8, 1941, in a sermon titled The Weight of Glory, he taught, "We are told to deny ourselves and to take up our crosses in order that we may follow Christ. And nearly every description of what we shall ultimately find if we do so contains an appeal to desire. It would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition, when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. If a longing part of you wanders off like a prodigal child and ends up playing in the mud, become the capable leader it desperately needs. Embrace your desire and then lead it with love. Invite Jesus to be with it. Hand over your burdens of fear and regret, and receive new gifts and new dreams from him, the most precious of which is the gift of his presence. Put envy and desire to work for your highest good. Your envy can notify you of unmet desire, signaling you to examine what's missing in your life. Envy and desire can become the dreamers in your internal family. How can you develop the qualities you wish you had? Let your envy and desire motivate you to design your life thoughtfully and make your own creative contribution to the world. Facing desire is not for the faint of heart, but take courage, because God can fulfill your desires and longings by giving you the good things He wants for you. It's amazing what happens when we give our dreams to Him.
Chapter 13. Boundaries with Guilt and Shame. To embrace and love who we are, we have to reclaim and reconnect with the parts of ourselves we've orphaned over the years. Brené Brown, Rising Strong, The Reckoning, The Rumble, The Revolution. No one who hopes in you will ever be put to shame. Psalm 25:3. Guilt. Noun. A painful emotion experienced when one believes one's actions or thoughts have violated a moral or personal standard. Shame. Noun. A painful emotion caused by the belief that one is, or is perceived by others to be, inferior or unworthy of affection or respect because of one's actions, thoughts, circumstances, or experiences. What if you could trade your shame for a life of joy and creativity? Unburdening your shame is more possible than you ever thought. Listen to discover how. In the garden, Adam and Eve were unashamed. Genesis 2:25. But the dawn of sin brought the dawn of shame. And to this day, each person has to face this painful emotion. The burden of shame comes from evil, from others, and from your inner critic. Evil wants to stifle the freedom that comes with knowing you're loved. People hurt you with their actions, cutting remarks, dismissive eye rolls, and furrowed brows. And your shaming protectors unwittingly take the bait, increasing condemnation and the threat of isolation. How do you move from a life of self-sabotaging shame and discover the peace that comes from accepting yourself, with your human limitations as well as your God-given potential? In this chapter, we'll explore how to make the crucial transition to a life of goodness, creativity, and authentic connection. You can redirect your misguided inner critic. You can befriend the weary parts of your soul carrying burdens of guilt and shame. So step out of the stronghold and receive the treasures that Jesus, the lover of your soul, longs to pour into your life. On which side of the line do you tend to live your life? Self-condemnation or self-acceptance? Julie takes a U-turn when she feels shame. I hurt so much I can barely breathe, Julie said, wringing her hands. The criticism feels like a knife to my heart. No matter how hard I try to catch up at work, I only fall further behind. I'm such a failure. Julie came to see me, Allison, because she needed help navigating a tense relationship with her supervisor, Jeff. He was accusing Julie of not contributing her fair share on an important project. Julie's husband was leaving her for another woman, and her son was moving back in after losing his job. When Julie explained why she was falling behind, her supervisor became even more accusatory, calling her unreliable and complaining about how much overtime he had worked to compensate for her performance gap. Bad dreams awakened Julie at night. Unable to get back to sleep, she would lie awake for hours, rehearsing her troubles, then drag herself to work the next day, counting the minutes until she could leave. Feeling paralyzed emotionally, Julie fantasized about escaping her pain. It would be easier if I just didn't exist, she caught herself thinking. But these mortifying thoughts further increased her sense of worthlessness. As I talked with Julie, I could tell she was working hard to see the situation objectively. She understood her supervisor's frustration about picking up slack at work, slack created by Julie's life crisis. But where was Jeff's compassion? I've been a dependable employee for years. Now I'm going through one of the most painful trials of my life, she cried, and all Jeff can do is criticize me and demand I work harder? No matter how hard Julie tried to stay positive, Jeff's accusing words had taken root in her soul. Focus and befriend. As we continued our session, I asked Julie if she could picture her shame. She closed her eyes and, engaging her prayerful imagination, said that it was as if an arrow had pierced straight through her heart. As she focused on this image, I asked Julie how she felt toward it. She replied that she noticed a second, critical part of herself, a part that was shooting the arrows. This inner critic seemed to have picked up Jeff's arrows and was using them to shame her by saying, "You're a useless waste of space." "I've tried telling myself that Jeff is a heartless jerk," Julie said, "but shooting the arrow back at him doesn't help. It makes me feel worse. I guess this critical part of me would rather I feel the shame." I asked Julie if mentally rehearsing Jeff's harsh messages was helping. She said no, but that her inner critic didn't know what else to do. As she focused on the shaming part with curiosity, however, it began to soften and step back. "I feel calmer," Julie said, indicating that her spirit-led self was taking the lead. Invite and unburden. I asked Julie if she wanted to invite Jesus to draw near, trusting that he knew what to do with her pain. Julie felt tears welling back up in her eyes. "Yes," she said. "When I heard you say that Jesus might be able to help me find another way, I saw an image of a hurting baby. This younger part of me needs to know that someone wants to be with her. She feels so useless. She's looking around for Jesus because she knows he can take this feeling away. And now he's holding her in his arms and telling her she's important, that he wants to be with her. Does this part of you need anything from him?" I asked. "His peace," Julie said softly. "She's finally feeling his peace." Summary of Julie's U-turn. When Julie focused on, befriended, and invited Jesus to draw near to her shaming inner critic, then she was able to find the exile it protected, the source of her pain. She sought Jesus' help to care for this young part of her soul, which she prayerfully imagined as a baby feeling useless and alone. She unburdened and became stronger internally as she sensed Jesus tenderly reassuring her vulnerable exile. No longer shaming herself or carrying the burden of feeling useless, Julie could formulate a plan to advocate for herself. She requested a leave of absence so she could take more time to heal, evidence that she had integrated her hardworking protector constructively into her internal family. Understanding shame. As demonstrated in Julie's story, shame is a persistent emotional burden that a tender exile carries when believing the hurtful messages of a shaming inner critic. "You don't have what it takes. You're bad and not worthy of love." Parts that carry this burden of shame believe that you don't matter or belong. All or nothing, black or white thinkers, they repeat dreary refrains like broken records. You might try to forget the past and move on. The pain won't relent, though, and you feel stuck and overwhelmed. Carrying a burden of shame erodes your sense of self-respect over time, crippling your soul and stifling your joy. What if both these parts, your shaming inner critic and the exile carrying the burden of shame, could become your allies? Given adequate time and attention, they can. The healing process begins with focusing gently on these parts and listening to them. Appreciate both your inner critic and your burdened exile for their hard work and get to know them better. Help them find rest in the presence of your spirit-led self.
Lessons from limitations. Once, when I was talking with some friends about learning from limitations, I found myself sharing about a dark valley I had been through. The next morning, I woke up hungover with shame, as Brené Brown describes. I wanted to crawl out of my skin. My chest was clenched, and I felt sick to my stomach. Engulfed in a tsunami of regret, I wondered, will those people ever talk to me again? Was I too much for them? Why did I have to go and ruin everything? And then I asked myself, how do I make this pain go away? Thankfully, I remembered, oh yes, I can take a U-turn. I focused my attention on the feeling and at the same time became aware of an irate voice in my mind, a voice that was absolutely furious with me. I could imagine this critical part of myself hurling insults and profanities. Wow, I thought. I'm glad no one can hear what I'm thinking. I get you, I responded from my spirit-led self, and immediately my inner critic softened. This stuff works, I thought, smiling. I continued listening intentionally from my spirit-led self, and the shame feelings subsided. Focusing and befriending helped me get some relief. What's next? I thought. Oh yeah, invite. And so I invited Jesus to draw near this exhausted inner critic. Jesus said, I love you. I'm so proud of you. You have so much to give. Oh, how I love Jesus. He is so good. My angry critic then handed over its rage to Jesus, and my exile handed over its sense of shame to him too. In the presence of Jesus and my spirit-led self, my critic backed off from berating me. What remained was curiosity. Did I share appropriately? Should I not have shared about my painful experience? And because everyone can benefit from consulting with a personal boundaries committee, I called Allison to see whether she thought my sharing had been helpful. Absolutely it was helpful, she said. I beamed in response, partly because I had shared appropriately, and partly because I had coached myself through a successful U-turn. I had cared for the hurting part of myself and eased the pressure on my friend to be my first responder. And I was grateful for her affirmation of what I had already heard from God. Benefits, dangers, needs, and fears. Consider the benefits, dangers, needs, and fears associated with shame. Benefits. Shame can indicate that something in your life needs to change. The feeling of shame can lead you to parts of yourself that need your attention. Signal when you're overestimating your own power. Be an invitation to step out in courage and creativity. Alert you to emotional danger. Motivate you to discover your true identity. Motivate you to discover your true identity. Dangers. Shame will show up. The question is when, where, and how. Unaddressed shame surfaces in unhealthy ways, leading to the feeling that you aren't good enough and something is inherently wrong with you, interruption of your creative process and a hesitation to take risks, defensiveness, fear of rejection, and the tendency to withdraw from others, lying, blaming, manipulating, and people-pleasing, internal unrest or chaos, including suicidal thoughts. Needs. Perhaps more than any other emotion, the part of your soul carrying shame wants your attention and needs to learn to be vulnerable and experience the compassion of your spirit-led self. Learn a new perspective that you don't have to beat yourself up. Let Jesus mend the injury that caused your shame. Trust you to choose emotionally safe people with whom you can speak carefully on its behalf and not share with people who may re-injure you or shame you even more. Practice hearing God's voice of truth and love. Fears. Like all other parts of your soul, the part of you carrying your shame wants to help you, even though its methods may be misguided. Learn why it resists letting your spirit-led self take the lead. Common examples of those fears are, I'll be proved a fool. I'll be exposed as a fraud. I'll be cut off, shut out, rejected, and alone. When you notice the feeling of shame in your own life, take a U-turn and focus on this burdened part of your soul that needs your attention. If it's too close to you, listen and show up for it. As you do, it will take a step back. Then, as the part of you carrying shame develops trust in your spirit-led self, it can help you develop a new understanding of who you are. Players in the shame game. In addition to your shaming inner critic, you might experience an overly guilty conscience or be perfectionistic. However a protector part shows up for you, focus on it, befriend it, and get to know the burdened part it protects so that you can be set free. Let's look more closely now at these managers that play the tricky game of shame. The shaming inner critic. In a misguided effort to help you improve, your shaming inner critic reminds you of all the ways you don't measure up. In response, an exile harbors this false message. But your spirit-led self knows better and can set the record straight. Often, as with Julie, the accusing words or critical attitudes of another person set this shaming inner critic on its course. The accusations might be personal and linked to a current conflict. Or they might be rooted in words that were spoken or left unspoken by a caregiver or authority figure long ago. Either way, the accusing words, insinuations, or critical attitudes rouse your shaming inner critic. Thinking it's helping, your critic berates you, and an exile weighed down with the burden of shame pays the price. We've found that what helps is to focus on it, befriend it, invite Jesus to draw near, and unburden it. Let it take in the truth that God loves you just as you are. Then, integrate this newly transformed critic into your internal family and put it to work reminding you of God's powerful love. Seek to understand a shaming inner critic, and invariably, you'll encounter an exile that carries a burden as a result. This younger part might be holding on to painful memories of experiences that left you feeling rejected or isolated. Perhaps you were abused or exposed to violence as a child. Or maybe you grew up around addiction or mental illness or were embarrassed by having made a mistake. Parts can carry these experiences into the present. Sometimes present-day struggles make us susceptible to feeling shame. For example, Julie's shaming inner critic berated her for falling behind at work. No matter its origin, the burden of shame stifles your joy and keeps you from letting your light shine. To work with an exile carrying shame, first focus on it from your spirit-led self. You may experience it as an overwhelming feeling of wanting to hide or crawl out of your skin. Or you may notice it as a thought that you're not good enough, or you're a terrible person. Stay present with the exile carrying this burden until you become curious about it and compassionate toward it. Then invite Jesus to be near. The burden of shame doesn't stand a chance in the power of God's presence. God is kind, but he's not soft. In kindness, he takes us firmly by the hand and leads us into a radical life change. Romans chapter 2, verse 4, the message. Julie's ashamed exile was overwhelming her and hadn't received the care it needed. So when Jeff started criticizing her at work, the feeling of shame increased exponentially. Though Jeff's words were not caring, God eventually used them for good in Julie's life. Through this experience, Julie strengthened her sense of her own identity and intrinsic value in God's sight. She grew in her ability to advocate for herself and to ask for what she needed. As she faced her pain, she learned that talking about her wounds and losses was necessary and helpful. And she began to understand that, rather than striving for perfection, her vulnerabilities made her approachable, relatable, and even more beautiful. A guilty conscience. In areas of temptation, your guilty conscience fights like a warrior. This valiant part battles with other parts of your soul to do the right thing. Without it, your firefighters, for example, might destroy your life by derailing you with endless, destructive, feel-good behavior. Listen to this part of you that does the hard work of keeping you on the road that leads to life. It can serve as an important advisor. King David was too far from his guilt when he called for Bathsheba and plotted to kill her husband. Likewise, he was too far from his guilt when he failed to discipline his rebellious sons, ultimately contributing to their corruption and even, in some cases, to their death. Later, he demonstrated that he had come to value his guilt when he confessed in Psalm 51, "I have sinned." His story is a cautionary tale. Sometimes guilt can get too close and become extreme. In this case, your conscience becomes a guilt tripper harping on you for making a mistake. When guilt overtakes you, even asking forgiveness and making amends won't alleviate your sense of failure. Whereas a guilty part at a healthy distance leads to confession, repentance, and renewal. Guilt that's too close weighs down an exiled part of your soul. It nags you for doing something wrong, even when you didn't. It doesn't want you to accept your human limitations and the grief you might need to feel. And it may try to convince you of the lie that, without its constant reminders about all the ways you fall short, God won't love you. But Jesus did too much on the cross for that message to be true. As you get to know your guilt, you may find that you indeed have something to confess. Or you may find that you have a burden of false guilt. In this case, it may be that you are considering yourself to be more powerful than you are. Rest in the knowledge that He is in control.
A perfectionistic part. On a quest for love, significance, and security, perfectionistic parts work tirelessly to prove your worth. For example, my, Allison's, mom loves to recount how her perfectionism met its match in my dad during their early years of marriage. Shortly after his return from Vietnam, they returned to his hometown and rented their first home together. Having not had the best of childhoods, my mom feared not being able to create a happy family. Her perfectionistic manager defined domestic happiness as meticulous housekeeping, so she threw herself into perfecting their tiny rental. Each day, she vacuumed thoroughly, ensuring that fresh vacuum cleaner tracks appeared on the carpet. One night, a few weeks into their marriage, my mom greeted my dad at the door and politely requested that he walk around the tracks on the freshly vacuumed carpet. My dad declined her request, replying that he planned to live in their house. In this moment of reckoning, my mother's perfectionistic manager bumped up against a part of my father that had a different perspective on what makes a happy home. And thankfully, her love for my dad helped her manager part relax and adjust its strategy. The simple decision to cede her perfect vacuum track set her and their life together off on a new path. Throughout my parents' nearly 50 years of marriage, they've created what Madeline L'Engle calls a two-part invention, a partnership that harmonizes two interdependent parts like two melodies. My mom leads her perfectionistic part to create a warm home brimming with hospitality, and my dad's gregarious, happy-go-lucky part helps them fill the house with a joyful community of family, neighbors, and friends. If you have a perfectionistic part, understand that it's trying to keep you from feelings of shame. As was the case with my, Allison's, mom, your perfectionistic part may have developed as you grew up in your family of origin. Perhaps you received messages that you needed to perform in order to be accepted and loved. Or maybe you felt that all your parents' hopes and dreams were pinned on you. Perhaps you experienced social pressure or grew up in a family with secrets about alcoholism, drug addiction, or abuse. Now that you're an adult, your inner perfectionist may be working overtime to disprove the message that you are defined by your past. It might believe shaming messages such as, "If I can do enough perfectly, my pain will go away." In her popular TED Talk, The Power of Vulnerability, Brené Brown teaches that wholehearted people have the courage to reveal their imperfections to others and to themselves. They're willing to let go of who they should be in order to be who they are. Cur, from which we get our English word courage, means heart in Latin. It takes courage to tell the authentic story of who you are. If you struggle with an inner critic, an overly guilty conscience, or a perfectionistic part, focus, befriend, and invite Jesus to draw near. These well-meaning protectors have been working for a long time and could use some well-deserved rest. Rewriting your narrative. The sense of being bad drives parts from one another inside your soul and causes you to isolate from other people too. Psychiatrist and author of the powerful book, The Soul of Shame, Kurt Thompson wrote that much of shame's power lies in its ability to isolate both within and between minds. Isolation leads to anguish and stifles your creativity. But the burden of shame, the belief that you are bad, could not be further from the truth. The Holy Spirit beckons you to reconnect and believe that you are loved just as you are. How are you making sense of what you have experienced? Are you letting the past send parts of yourself into hiding and isolate you from others? Respond to shame, Thompson says, by retelling your personal story in light of the biblical story that proves how much God loves you. How do you go about rewriting the narrative believed by the part of you carrying the burden of shame? Get to know this part of yourself. Think of how Jesus went into the desert where he could face the devil head on, Thompson suggests. Likewise, notice the refrain being repeated again and again by the part of your soul believing evil's lie. Thompson also encourages keeping a shame inventory, including writing down how many times a day you feel shame, to interrupt shaming neuropathways, and to pay attention to what you're paying attention to. Then write a new story in light of the fact that God cherishes you. Instead of carrying the belief, I don't matter, tell yourself the truth. I can be real because I belong to Him. If you practice believing that new narrative, the hurting parts of your internal family will regain trust in your spirit-led self. You'll integrate your inner critic and exile into a team of former rivals. Unburdening shame. The part of you that once spoke shame when transformed in the presence of your spirit-led self will become an advocate of transparency. It will remind you of the value in letting down your guard and accepting your human limitations. Once debilitating you, the part of you that understands the burden of shame will now create a welcoming environment for your internal family and for others. And the more resilient you become, the more you will invite others into that experience of authenticity. Burdens of shame do not define you. Whereas these lies say you are unimportant, God says you are decidedly well-known and deeply loved. And you can be real because you are His. You are the light of the world, and shame has no place in the light.
Chapter 14. Boundaries with challenging parts of others. Whether or not you realize the full potential of this relationship vision depends not on your ability to attract the perfect mate, but on your willingness to acquire knowledge about hidden parts of yourself. Harville Hendricks, Getting the Love You Want. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Ted said he doesn't love me anymore, said the urgent text from my friend Isabel. I, Kim, knew her marriage was in trouble, but this message caught me off guard. As I stood in my kitchen flipping breakfast pancakes, Isabel's life flashed before my eyes. It's her second marriage, I thought to myself, and now it's over. Overwhelmed with sadness at the thought of my friend's pain, I paused to take a U-turn to calm the part of me that was feeling distraught. That's when it hit me. Ted was speaking from a part of himself. Fortunately, Isabel had been learning about spirit-led self-leadership. She had also been learning about the different parts of the soul. So I felt confident she would respond well to my encouragement not to react to words that were clearly coming from a protective, but no doubt well-meaning, part of Ted. Isabel and I both knew he loved her in his heart of hearts and wanted their marriage to work. Do you think a part of Ted might be struggling? I texted back. Now that you mention it, I do, came Isabel's reply. Later, Isabel told me that the realization that Ted had been speaking from a struggling part of himself changed everything. Whereas she had initially felt devastated, reframing Ted's words brought her perspective and calmed her heart. As a result, Isabel didn't catastrophize the situation. And together, she and Ted charted a course out of dangerous waters. Earlier in my life, I might have replied to Isabel's SOS signal with a response like, "How awful! I can't believe he would say that to you." Or, "You deserve to be treated better than that." But these responses, though well-intentioned, could have magnified my friend's despair and contributed to her conflict. I'm grateful I'm learning a better way and that my critical part is learning to become a parts detective. Transforming your critic into a parts detective. A well-developed internal parts detective identifies when someone is speaking or behaving from a hijacking protector or an overwhelming exile, when anger, fear, or some other emotion has eclipsed that person's spirit-led self. Instead of wrangling with that part, your internal parts detective prompts you to get curious about it. I wonder why she's acting that way. Or, I wonder what pain he's feeling underneath his anger. You can assist others who are hurting by de-escalating tense situations, setting external boundaries, and creating opportunities for deeper connection. Turning your well-meaning critic into a parts detective doesn't mean you're authorized to recklessly point out when someone else has been taken over by a rebellious part. Instead, it means growing in your understanding that a well-meaning part may be instigating someone's hurtful behavior. When you find someone difficult to be with, put your parts detective to work wisely and discreetly. Don't misuse your insights, but seek to grow in understanding. Having devoted the preceding chapters to developing healthy boundaries on the inside, in this final chapter, we'll examine how these internal boundaries can help you establish healthy boundaries with others. Specifically, let's consider how to respond to others in need, resolve conflicts, love others who have what we call parts in process, create deeper connection and more satisfying relationships, and maintain healthy distance from unsafe parts of other people. Responding to others in need. We want to care well for others. Unfortunately, our loved ones' struggles often trigger our own troubling emotions, making it difficult to be of real help. How do you respond when someone shares a problem with you? When someone shares a need or frustration, the following four types of responses are common, but are not always most helpful. Do you recognize your own go-to method here? Agreement. You join in with the person and blame someone else for the problem. I can't believe she did that to you. Pep talk. You encourage the person to recognize that she doesn't really need to feel this way. But you're such a great person. Don't let it get you down. Minimizing. You try to downplay the problem to avoid facing a painful reality. At least it's not worse. Fixing. You offer a quick fix to a complicated problem. You should just stop thinking about it. There's a time and a place for agreeing, pep talks, minimizing, and fixing. And we can do more. As our spirit-led self leads, we can become Sabbath for one another. To become a friend whose presence invites rest and reflection. Practice taking a U-turn and notice what happens inside of you when someone comes to you in need. As you cultivate spirit-led self-leadership, you'll be better equipped to respond constructively to friends and loved ones. The following ideas may also help you create opportunities for deeper connection the next time someone shares a problem or a painful feeling with you. Acknowledge the other person's hurting part by asking, "Have you considered that this part of you exists for a reason and has good intentions? How might it be trying to help you?" Ask the person how she feels toward the part that's hurting. In doing so, you might help her identify an inner critic or an exiled fear. Encouraging her to get to know her own protectors will help her take a U-turn. Remind her that the person who has hurt her probably is behaving from a part, too. She doesn't have to like that part, but the understanding will help her realize there's more to this offending person than the part that hurt her. Offer to pray for the part of her that's suffering, and offer to pray for the part of the person who hurt her. "Blessed are the peacemakers," Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 9. As you live increasingly from your spirit-led self, you'll become an instrument of peace and help your friends become peacemakers too. Resolving conflict, the power of curiosity and compassion. Let's move now from responding to people in need to resolving difficult interpersonal conflicts. What if you are the one with a painful relationship issue? In difficult situations, maintaining intimacy, the experience of close connection, involves getting curious about your own vulnerabilities and the ways you seek to protect yourself. And it involves learning to share constructively on behalf of those exiles and protectors. Resolving conflict also involves turning your well-meaning critic of others into a parts detective, becoming adept at discerning the vulnerabilities of the ones you love, and thus learning to view them with compassion. Whereas helplessness leads to depression, moving into a place of agency and self-advocacy brings joy when you're living by the Spirit. So prayerfully seek God's help for the creative courage to stand up for this part of yourself, even if standing up means deciding to love and pray for the other person from a comfortable distance. Here's an example of how I, Kim, learned to resolve conflict. It was a busy season in our marriage. My husband, Ken, was writing under a tight deadline, and I was preparing to lead a soul care retreat. While we focused on these commitments, our stack of unopened mail grew higher and higher. On my way to and from the coffee maker each day, I eyed it with growing aggravation. A part of me insisted that someone take action. I could not focus on my retreat preparation until this administrative mission had been accomplished. The mail was cluttering our kitchen and my mind. And to make matters worse, Ken didn't seem troubled at all. After much stewing, my reformer part sought out an opportunity to settle the matter and waited for the right moment. Sure enough, one morning Ken smiled kindly and said, "Your birthday's coming up, and I'm wondering what you'd like to do this year." "I'd like you to help me with the mail for 1 hour," I instantly replied. From the bewildered look on his face, I could see that a part of him wasn't enthused at all by my idea for a birthday present. "How about I take you out for a romantic dinner?" he responded cautiously. And just like that, there was tension between us. Thankfully, within a few hours, my spirit-led self prompted me to take a U-turn. First, I realized a part of me was anxious about the growing pile of mail that wasn't magically disappearing. I focused on this worried reformer part and came to appreciate its fear that Ken and I might overlook some important letter or bill. Befriending my worry, I invited Jesus to draw near. I handed over to him my fear and received peace in exchange. Then I recruited this peaceful part to advise me about how to speak with Ken moving forward. As a result of my U-turn, I was able to speak on behalf of my fear with intentionality instead of being reactive. The next evening, I waited in the kitchen for Ken to come home from work. When he walked in the door, he held open his arms for a hug. "Honey," I said, "I'm sorry. I love you, and I know you love me. And a part of me is feeling anxious that some things aren't getting done." Once he understood that I was feeling anxious, we were able to conquer the mountain of mail together. We felt more connected to each other, and from that place, we were able to clarify our respective responsibilities at home. This experience reminded me that, when problem-solving, it's crucial to develop emotional awareness and share new discoveries with the ones I love. Speaking on behalf of my worried reformer part freed us to enjoy working together and to be reminded all over again that we make a great team. One useful habit to develop with a close friend or spouse is simply to agree that when one of you feels anxiety or any other challenging emotion, you'll say, "Just a moment, please. I'm taking a U-turn." This simple practice works well for Ken and me. As a result, instead of experiencing one another's reaction with the burden of having to figure out what it's about and how to deal with it, we engage in our own process of reflection, and then we can speak more clearly and lovingly to one another. As you gain perspective about a part that is either too close or too far from your spirit-led self, such as one carrying anger, grief, or insecurities, you'll be able to connect more genuinely with that emotion or belief. As a result of the good communication that forms internally, you'll find you communicate more effectively with others too. And effective communication is just one of the many ways that caring for your soul helps you spread the love of Christ to those around you. So, to review, developing healthy boundaries during conflict involves differentiating from your own unruly emotion, connecting or reconnecting from your spirit-led self with this emotion, forming a healthier, stronger internal attachment, and communicating your